We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
I'm just a fan. I'm not a football evaluator. And as a fan, what I see is a dynamic player with a lot of potential, a lot of ability, a lot of heart, and a strong work ethic. So we're looking for a general manager and a head coach who will develop not just the quarterback position, but the talent around him, and establishing a strong defense to help the quarterback to bring the Bears to success.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's George McCaskey on Justin Fields. It does appear, despite the fact he wouldn't answer the question, that indeed, liking Justin Fields and wanting to maximize his talents as a Bears quarterback are going to be a prerequisite for having this job as coach or GM. As we're trying to follow all of the names getting added to the list, the Bears pretty much understand the Bears are going to interview everybody. And now we're seeing the excitement over Brian Flores' name being added to this long, long, long list. I'm all for that. Interview everybody. Go ahead. Bring them all in. Makes you less likely to screw it up. And maybe, just maybe, you hear something you wouldn't have otherwise heard. The more, the merrier. Please, 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 please.
After seeing the NFL operate so insularly, where you have a guy like Jerry Jones who interviewed Marvin Lewis and then Mike McCarthy, yeah, I'll take this all day.
Marvin, are you indeed black? Yes, thank you. I've really learned a lot this interview. Now that we can check that box, and now we're going to hire Mike McCarthy, who still doesn't know how to use a clock. Ugh. Robert Mays is on Twitter, at Robert Mays. He's the host of the Athletic Football Show, NFL writer at The Athletic. He is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. So many people had so many strong feelings throughout all of yesterday. Robert, at what point, and I'm not going to say positively, negatively, or anywhere in between, at what point in the press conference yesterday did you feel the strongest about something?
I think it was during the Owen Kreutz answer, and it wasn't because I was offended by George McCaskey throwing Owen Kreutz under the bus. It was because I was so struck in that moment by how uncharismatic and unnimble he is in those moments. And I think that's kind of the takeaway that I had, is that he seems like a man who means very well, who really wants this to work out, is probably a little bit out of his depth when put in front of the media. And hopefully, you know, come whatever barriers there may be, they figure this out, even if we don't have all the optimism, all the faith in the world and the people making the decision.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It was just very jarring to hear George McCaskey say that when asked about somebody who has given so much to the organization. It's
just say nothing. Just say nothing. Just hand wave it away and just, you know, I wasn't privy to those conversations, and that's something that we'll look into. You can handle it in 8 seconds. And that is just the most frustrating part about this, is that the hole just keeps getting deeper and deeper as you feel him digging it.
Well, and as somebody who is an emotionally invested Bears fan, who studies the entire league en masse, week after week, you guys, you and Nate Tice, put together that football show almost like a living documentary podcast after every Sunday night football game. You're watching all the games. You're doing everything you can to study it. And then you're emotionally attached to the Bears. When you hear George McCaskey say, Ted Phillips is still involved, there will be two new voices in Tanisha Wade and Lamar Campbell, there will be other people involved like Bill Polian. When you put it all together, I don't know about you, Robert, but something tells me it might just be a case of who's yelling the loudest. And I really hope there is some sort of respect to the voices in that room, not just one or two of them.
I think that the group makes sense. If it were up to me, I feel like the Juice Campbell part of it I get in terms – or Sue Campbell part of it I get in terms of trying to get the players' voices and opinions in some sort of consolidated way. I still feel like I would have wanted somebody who had been in the league in the last 5-10 years, just had been a player, had to deal with coaches, maybe knows a couple of these people through the grapevine. I just think that voice in the room – might have been helpful, but you also don't want a chorus of voices. If you look at the final group that they have there, I understand how they arrived at that point. And so far, here's what I'll say. I don't think yesterday inspired much confidence when you think about just the tenor of that press conference overall. But when you look at what they've done over the last 24 hours, the names that they've brought in, these are the right names. This is the right swath of people. It's the right variety of backgrounds. So, again, the energy in that place yesterday leaves a lot to be desired, but I think so far they deserve credit, however much we want to give them, for the list of names that they're going to talk to for both the GM and the head coaching openings.
I guess I'm going to ask advice here. I know Layla makes fun of me for using our guests as free therapy here. But when I follow you on Twitter, it sounds like you go through some of the same mental gymnastics as I do when it comes to trying to still be enough of a fan while trying to also be a critical thinker and a proper professional skeptic. And yesterday was a whipsaw for a lot of us who did have genuine optimism and then found all of that dashed by typical Bearsness and then felt stupid and a little bit ashamed for ever believing in the first place. And I felt like the whole day took almost like a year. You know, it's the only way to explain it. It recapitulated a lot of Bears experience for me.
I totally agree. That's exactly what I went through. But that's also kind of come back around as you see the names they're talking to now. My frustration with this is that you now, with the structure they have in place, by having the GM report directly to George and have that be now the way that the power kind of goes, you're having the GM be the sole voice in football operations, right? That the GM is now the centerpiece of whatever your football machine looks like. That is okay. That is a setup that can work. But now what you're putting on the GM as part of that setup changes. Now the general manager that you're hiring there, and this is a larger conversation about the people we try to hire for these jobs, where we look at candidates for these jobs, all of that. Now the GM doesn't just become this guy who sits there and grinds tape. No guy is like that now. But if you're going to have that person be the person on the football side, that person is a staff builder. He's a culture setter. He has to figure out who he wants to hire in all of these jobs. He has to be a problem solver in all these different ways. That setup is fine. But I think we have to understand that the scope and lens and mindset and perspective that you give that job to, that person has to have all of those qualities in a way he might not if you have like a central president of football operations.
I don't think, can put into context how much the league has changed in the past 5 years and how the quarterback has to have changed with it. This year, I think, is a very good example when you look at the rookie quarterback class of what all has to go into developing talent and how these things seem to change even while these quarterbacks are in college moving up the ranks. When you think about that piece of this, what concerns you? What do you want to point out about how important it is to get that position either not just right, but also developed, or to make decisions in a way that is adapting with the league?
What McCaskey said yesterday about not having to commit to someone who was committed to Justin Fields, I understand having to say that in the moment. But you need someone who has a plan for developing that position. And that is, when you look at the pool of candidates, if you're going to hire a defensive-minded head coach, I need that defensive-minded head coach to lay out to me who his offensive coordinator is going to be, why he's going to be his offensive coordinator, what his offensive staff positionally is going to look like, why it's going to look like that, and what the plan is to create an infrastructure for his quarterback, whether that's through his quarterback coach, an offensive line coach he wants to bring in. That plan needs to be rock solid. if you, no matter who you hire, but especially if you hire a defensive-minded head coach. If you hire an offensive-minded head coach, it changes a little bit just because that person has a larger hand in whatever that plan is going to look like. But that has to be first and foremost. You know, you look at it, a team like the Browns, who I really appreciate that the Bears have looked at their front office for options because I think that their processes are really strong and having some familiarity with the thinking and kind of the mood and attitude in that building, I think it's a really smart idea. The Browns steadfastly believe that the quarterback is the most important position, and not just the quarterback, but what you build around the quarterback. Cleveland is number one in the league this year, number one in offensive spending. That is not an accident. And that's with a rookie quarterback contract. They're still number one in offensive spending. They understand in the league right now, you have to have consistent offense every single year in order to be a consistent winner. And those are the sort of processes that I think ultimately serve you well. And so I think that no matter who they bring in, that has to be the number one priority, is building an infrastructure and a support system around your quarterback and developing that quarterback.
And then I think of Bill Polian and his criticism of Lamar Jackson. And that's where there's a disconnect to me.
I understand that. And my Dan talks about doing mental gymnastics. My mental gymnastics here are that if Bill Polian was picking the players, I'd be very concerned about it. It still feels like, based on the pool of candidates they have looked at so far, that Bill Polian, if he's directing this really, is plugged in enough to find the right pool of candidates. So I think that having him as a voice there maybe isn't as scary as it might seem, considering some of the more publicized opinions he's had in the last 4 or 5 years.
While we're talking about the choosing of players, it was something that was back of mind for me, and it was addressed. They gave lip service to it, and it was a drill where they talk about the relationship and this sacred relationship between coach and GM, and they gave us all the buzzwords. But what I'd like to know, if you are doing this potentially out of order, if you haven't declared you are going to go from the top of the masthead down, what does that do to the de facto division of responsibility and control of a roster? Because there have been coaches who use the old Bill Parcells, if I'm going to be making the meal, I got to buy the groceries. And even though it's sometimes not that explicit, you do get coaches who over time talk to Jim Harbaugh and Trent Baalke about how sometimes these things work and sometimes these relationships are more nuanced, where a coach is going to want more control, perhaps over time, who's going to want to vest into some control maybe. How does that work out, and what are the pitfalls right now that the Bears face in not having a hard wall between the two at the moment?
It can occasionally get knotty. I am not all that scared of the order of operations necessarily. I think you can look at 2 recent examples where the head coaches come in before the GM, and these are very different, but that was the case in both San Francisco and in Cleveland. San Francisco is kind of what you're talking about, right? Like, Kyle Shanahan is the number one kind of decision maker in that organization. He has a huge hand in shaping the personnel, and I think at times that's been to the 49ers' detriment. In Cleveland, Andrew Berry was hired after Kevin Stefanski was hired. They are incredibly aligned, right? Like, there is a mutual respect and overall overlap of vision with those two guys. But part of the reason I think that's possible is because you have someone like Paul DePodesta in that building that is going to make sure that those hires are on the same page. The Bears don't necessarily have that, right? Like, you don't have that president or right. that kind of football czar person.
You were talking about that before, that right? You have then now already entrusted somebody who is in any one of those conflicts, who's going to be the top decision maker on such things also.
Yeah, that can get knotty. I think that trying to do it, here's what you need to make sure going into this. You need to make sure that whatever you are looking for or whatever sort of tone you want to set with these hires is similar enough that if you do it in opposite order with the coach and then the GM, there's still enough of a similarity of value systems, vision, priorities, that there can be an alignment. I think that you should absolutely have a really well-tread, well-worn path of carpet between the personnel and the coaching staff. I think that ultimately is a good thing as long as the delineation of responsibilities is clear. Because I think that collaboration of What kind of players do you want? Why do you want those sort of players? What are you looking for here? I think that's ultimately well served, even if it can get a little bit murky for who's in charge of who and all of that other stuff.
All right. So, like I said, you're watching every game. You're taking in more information than most people can in one day that you do in like, or a week. You know, like you're taking in the most information when I think about the podcast you guys put together. Do you have any names on your list that you would like to see the Bears talk to?
I really like the coaches that they've brought in so far. I think they all make a lot of sense. I will admit this, and if you listen to the show, you've heard me say this 100 times. I believe that the quickest way and most effective way to a consistent winner in the NFL is hiring a play-calling offensive head coach. I just think that that is the model that's the easiest to rely on because it's something you can't have taken away from you. If you hire a defensive head coach and you have a really good offensive coordinator and Justin Fields has this fantastic second season and he blossoms into a star, that offensive coach is going to go away. That offensive coach is going to get hired away as a head coach. I think the most solid ground you can create with your staff is hiring an offensive-minded head coach who calls the plays. That being said, it isn't just the hottest play caller. It isn't just the guy with the craziest scheme. That guy also has to be a culture setter. He has to be an organizer. He has to be somebody who's, again, going to bring in the right staff. That is my number one thing with all of this. I want to know, who's your offensive line coach going to be? First question I would ask, who's your offensive line coach going to be? Who's your defensive coordinator going to be if you're an offensive-minded head coach? If you look at the recent hires that I think have worked out pretty well, Nick Sirianni was not the most attractive name on the market last year.
He nor got the best Stoutland. Press conference, right?
Right, exactly. And he got the Eagles to keep Jeff Stoutland. He got Jeff Stoutland, their offensive line coach, to stay there. He is one of the best offensive line coaches in the league, one of the best 4 or 5. That is the reason they're in the playoffs right now, is because of him and because of him staying there. Jonathan Gannon, their defensive coordinator, was an incredibly in-demand name last year on this cycle. If you look at what happened in Detroit, Dan Campbell is not necessarily the most exciting name, right? He was not the coordinator du jour. But if you look at the staff he put together, he hired Aaron Glenn to be his defensive coordinator, who had been the secondary coach in New Orleans for years. He is somebody that was very well respected across the league. And that defense in Detroit, if you watch them play with street free agents, guys off in college free agents, not a single high-level defensive player essentially on that entire roster after their injuries, they are so well coached. Passing stuff off, communication. Their secondary coach is Aubrey Pleasant, who was a cornerback's coach for the Rams last year when you saw what they did. He was also a coach that people really respected. That staff was very well built. So that has to be a huge part of this, no matter who the coach at the top is. That being said, if you're going to hire a play-calling offensive head coach and somebody that you believe is going to be a good culture setter, somebody who does set the right mindset in the building, I would look at offensive head coaches who have a varied background schematically. I want somebody that doesn't necessarily come from one tree in the way that Matt Nagy did. Coaching is problem solving. Coaching is being able to say, all right, this is what's in front of me. How do I fix this? How do I attack this? And having a bag of different options is hugely important there. Somebody like Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll has a fascinating background, right? Brian Daboll has coached several different positions when he was a position coach in New England. He was the offensive coordinator at Alabama, where he really got to implement a whole new kind of set of thinking as far as RPOs and certain modern aspects of the game. If you look at what their offense is in Buffalo right now, it's both unique when compared to other NFL offenses in terms of how wide open it is, but the quarterback run game that they've implemented is entirely driven by Josh Allen's skill set. So I think there are aspects of that that you can get excited about. This isn't a square peg round hole sort of situation with somebody like Brian Daboll. He's been able to build an offense that fits his personnel because of the background that he has. So I don't know who's going to be successful or who's not, but those are the pillars that I would follow. Offensive-minded head coach, who is your staff and why, and how varied is your background, because it gives you more answers when you have to change. Sirianni's another really good example, right? He has a really varied background. He's coached several different positions, wide receivers, quarterbacks. He was on the Chiefs staff. He was on the Chargers staff. And if you look at what they were in Indy, they have a deep bag of stuff to go to. Frank Reich has a very similar background. And that ability for the Eagles to kind of change their stripes in midseason this year and lean into this run game that they have, that isn't necessarily something you describe to Nick Sirianni's background, but it's because he's seen so many things that he can do it. So that would be the template if I was following one, but I still think you should cast as wide a net as possible.
It's funny that you beat me to it as you were talking. I said, oh, this idea of a dynamic, play-calling, offensive-minded head coach who also had a knack for culture setting, along with a kick-ass defensive coordinator, I'm thinking the 2018 Bears. Because that's kind of what we thought was happening. I mean, even though we might have been choosing to ignore some warning signs, it's what we thought they had.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And unfortunately, there are times where that doesn't work out, and you have to think about the picking of the players. And that is the other side of this, right? If you look at what the Bears were under Ryan Pace, my biggest issue with all of this, I think that we really need to reset how we think about and talk about the tenures of general managers in the NFL. I don't want people to think about a GM as a list of players that were drafted over a certain amount of time, because it's easy to do that. I've fallen into that all the time. The numbers are going to be the same for more or less. It's going to be between 50 and 60% no matter who the GM is. That those are the numbers. If you're really good at it, really good, you're going to get 60% of them right. And if you go in knowing that, your priority has to be building the best processes possible. It has to be finding every single edge and following those processes at every single step. That is the opposite of what the Bears did over the last 5 or 6 years. Think about how many times they were convinced their guy was the guy. Think about how many trades up in the draft. Think about how many times with conviction they traded a fourth-round pick for somebody like Nick Foles because that was the answer. If you look at what's happened in places like Indianapolis, in places like Cleveland, there are missteps, right? The Carson Wentz thing is probably a mistake, but every single GM, every single tenure has something like that. The processes have to be right. You have to know what you don't know. You have to be able to challenge yourself and understand where you could be wrong. And both places, I know the thinking in both of those places, that is a dominant thought. And that's why I think you should tap into thinking like that versus what's happened in Chicago over the last 5 or 6 years. So that's why, even with what happened yesterday, there is still kind of a glimmer of hope there, because I think they're looking in the right places.
You're
right now.
You're doing it to me again, from your mouth to the ears of whatever football gods may exist. It's always appreciated.
Roberts had the most hope, except when he warned us about Charles Leno. Nice call, by the way. That contract looks pretty good on him.
Yeah, it's one of those things. When you have a guy who starts literally every single game of his entire career, is mostly a functional left tackle, that's a fairly valuable piece on an NFL team.
I'm not gonna let that slip. You get credit where that one's due, for sure.
Thanks, Robert.
I appreciate that. Thanks guys.
Robert.
Good talk to you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.